The protests following the killing of George Floyd in police custody last month have the country talking about how to move forward toward a more racially just society. One piece of that movement has focused on Confederate monuments and other symbols. In Richmond, Virginia, protesters have torn down statues of Confederate President Jefferson Davis and Christopher Columbus and covered a 60-foot memorial to Robert E. Lee with anti-racist messages. The city's mayor and Virginia's governor say they plan to remove more of the monuments. Demonstrators or local governments have also brought down statues in Kentucky, Alabama, Indiana, and elsewhere. Also last week, NASCAR banned the display of the Confederate flag at its events. The sport had been reluctant to make that move in the past, but said the flag runs contrary to its commitment to create a welcoming environment. Has a lot of people wondering if the tide has turned against Confederate symbols. Christine Emba is an opinion columnist and editor at the Washington Post. Christine, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been on with us before talking about Confederate monuments, and we seem to have had this pattern over the years. Some kind of incident, often of racist violence happens. We talk about the monuments. There's pushback. They stay. Does it feel different this time, the reaction you're seeing?
You're totally right in describing that pattern. But yes, there is something that seems to feel different about this moment, not just about the question of monuments, Confederate or otherwise, being discussed in the public square, but also the general national mood around how the general public is feeling about these monuments, the George Floyd protests, and the feelings they've engendered about conversations about racism and systemic inequality. There seems to be a much broader tolerance, polling is showing, for Americans being willing to accept that there are problems with race in this country and accept that there need to be solutions. So I think that's different from the feeling in the past. And I think that broader feeling will trickle down to the monument situation.
I think there will be arguments and debates over why this is happening now for years and decades to come. But do you have some thoughts on why this time, why 2020, why the George Floyd murder, this is happening now?
Yeah, this is a discussion that I've been having with friends and colleagues myself as recently as 10 minutes ago. I think there are a mixture of factors. One is the sort of overarching circumstance, really since the election of President Donald Trump. Many would say that he has, you know, sort of emboldened a new and more public form of, if not outright racism, intolerance, created something of a climate of bigotry. And there has been more openness to that discussion and pushback against that feeling. And then in this particular moment, you know, we are experiencing the coronavirus pandemic. People are at home and they are looking at their screens. They're watching the news. There's frankly not that much else to do. And so when incidents crop up, when the George Floyd video was made public, everybody watched it. It was hard to avoid seeing it. And so that made it part of the national conversation in a much bigger way, I think, than previous incidents have been before, simply because everybody was at home and could see it and had time to think about it, in large part, I think, due to this pandemic. But there's also, you know, demographic shifts. There have been larger discussions about inequality and racism and these topics over the past several years. But this confluence of kind of unusual factors seems to have primed people to get active, made them, if not angrier, at least more open and ready for change.
We're talking to Christine Emba, opinion columnist and editor at The Washington Post, talking about the changing conversation over race in the United States and symbols, including Confederate monuments and flags. Turning back to those monuments now, it seems like there's some pushback now to removing monuments, but it seems like there's not as much as there has been. Again, the time we talked in the past after the Charleston church shooting, the Charlottesville car attack, there's less pushback. Do you think that this talk about race right now is making us rethink what these Confederate symbols mean?
I think so. I mean, in the past, you know, as we've discussed before, the pushback has often been, you know, while they're history, we can't erase history. You don't want us to forget the past. And recent events have, you know, I think shown us that nobody has forgotten the past. And in fact, the past and the inequity, discrimination, racism that some of these symbols represent is still living with us very closely. And right now, the conversation seems to have turned to, okay, we know that this is happening. We know that racism is still with us. We don't now need to further memorialize it. Instead of, you know, continuing to keep it in a place of respect, we are changing from, you know, respecting the negative aspects of our past to, you know, wanting to recontextualize them, wanting to put them in their proper place, as it were.
And I've talked to some historians in the past about this issue, and they point out, you know, the statues, say a statue of Jefferson Davis or Robert E. Lee, didn't just magically congeal out of history. A lot of these happened at a particular point in American history, 1910s, 1920s. They're put there with a specific historical intent by a specific group of people. Do we talk enough about where these memorials came from in the first place?
You know, we really don't, but I think that that conversation is happening more and more right now. I'm actually from Richmond, Virginia, and I was, in fact, in Richmond this weekend, and it's famous for its Monument Avenue, which is a long, beautiful street decorated with enormous monuments of Confederate generals. And many of those monuments, like many of the ones across the American South, and in fact across America, as you said, were not put in place directly after the Civil War to remember fallen veterans, but were installed by groups like the Daughters of the Confederacy to sort of reify the lost cause narratives that the Civil War was a just enterprise and these were good Christian men, and also placed in public space to cement a social order, to say that these areas putting up these statues had rejected Reconstruction after the Civil War and that they were firmly in support of Jim Crow, and to note that by celebrating Confederate generals and slaveholders, that the spaces denoted a white space only, you know, that this was who was in charge of these areas. And so we have to think about that when we talk about them, about Confederate statues, Confederate flags being about remembering history. The Civil War was 4 years long. There's much more history in this country than that. Why we're choosing to celebrate this particular moment in time and what it stands for often had a much deeper and uglier meaning.
I want to check out a couple of our listener comments from the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy on Facebook writes about the statues. They can go. We'll still learn about them, but they shouldn't be honored. And can you talk about that, you know, the role of these statues? Are they educating us about our history, or are they honoring these particular figures?
Well, it really depends. And this is what both protesters and historians are talking about and in some cases arguing about right now. Some would say that they do profess to show history, but I would say that actually they are, in fact, celebrations. You know, they're monuments. Monuments meant to memorialize people. You know, the monuments are larger than we are often. We're looking up at these figures, and they're usually not presented with much context apart from, you know, say Jefferson Davis was an excellent general, which, you know, or rather Jefferson Davis was the president of the Confederacy, or Stonewall Jackson was an excellent general. First of all, both of those things are not necessarily true. And second of all, that obscures the larger history surrounding those, a history of slavery, a history of what the Civil War was actually about, and as we just discussed, why these particular statues were put into place. It's not clear whether they are, you know, learning experiences, whether they are giving a full picture of the history, or if they're something else.
We also heard from John on Facebook who writes, Jefferson and Washington held slaves. If they're taking down symbols of oppression, why not them as well? And that's a common argument once you start taking down statues. Do we need to revisit other historical figures?
You know, that's a common argument, but I find it to be a little bit disingenuous because there is a fairly clear answer. When we talk about the Confederate flag, or statues of Confederate generals and Confederate slaveholders, say the reason why, you know, Jefferson Davis is famous is because he was the president of the Confederacy, an insurrectionist movement that split away from the United States. That is the main thing that he is known for. That is his historical significance. On the contrary, George Washington was, you know, the president of the United States and did many other things that he is far more famous for. If we talk about which parts of history, which parts of these individuals' history, I think there's there's a pretty clear line between celebrating, you know, someone who acted treasonously against the United States, that is the main thing that they're known for, and an American president, someone who contributed many other things to the Union and the country that we have right now.
We're talking to Christine Emba, opinion columnist at The Washington Post, also opinion editor there, talking about the removal of Confederate monuments we've seen in some states over just the last couple of weeks. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we've reached a turning point on the issue of whether Confederate symbols and statues should stay or go? If so, why do you think the debate feels different now? What would you like to see maybe in place of monuments? So what would be a better way to educate us about our history? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk with Christine Emba of The Washington Post, looking at the actions of protesters and local governments to take down Confederate monuments. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the tide has turned against keeping these symbols up? Are you glad or not to see that change? NASCAR banning the Confederate battle flag at its events. What do you think of that idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Mike is with us in Oshkosh. Mike, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Mike?
Well, everyone talks about the Confederates standing for, you know, freedom in themselves and everything like that. But what really all the conflicts come down to is love or hate. Every conflict in this world, in this reality, in this history comes down to love or hate. So if you want to defend the loser of a battle over hate and love, in which love won, then you are defending hate. And therefore, you're battling against love. It's that simple.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Mike saying, if you're defending the Confederacy, you're on the wrong side of history, Christine.
Something close to that. And I think he makes a point that gels with one that I've heard made very justifiably about Confederate flags and Confederate memorials. Many say that they're, you know, celebrating Confederate history or the bravery of the Civil War, or that, in fact, the Civil War was fought for states' rights, and that needs to be respected. But they always tend to leave off the idea, the second part of that sentence, that the Civil War was fought for states' rights to own African people as slaves. And I'm not sure that's the sort of history, actually, that we need to continue to memorialize and celebrate. If that's the history that you're most invested in, fighting for the right to own other human beings, maybe you are on the wrong side of history.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mike, at 800-642-1234. I want to turn to NASCAR now, Christine. We saw some years back NASCAR sort of politely requested that people not bring the Confederate flag to their events. Some fans did not honor that request. Now, last week, they say they are banning it at all events and properties. Did that surprise you?
You know, it did surprise me somewhat because, as you said, there was a soft request that they tried a few years ago that was summarily ignored. And NASCAR is, you know, often seen as a sport of the South. It's extremely common at NASCAR games to see a profusion of Confederate flags flying in the stars and bars. But at the same time, you know, this is a moment in which many, many companies, corporations, individuals are, you know, revisiting their commitments against racism and actually what they think their customer base wants and should be. And NASCAR is a very popular sport. I mean, there are many, you know, Black and minority fans of NASCAR. And in this moment, you know, to make them comfortable coming to races, to show that, you know, they are a sport for all people, it makes sense that they would take this stand.
We are talking to Christine Emba, opinion columnist and editor at The Washington Post, looking at the decision to take down Confederate monuments in some communities around the country and remove the Confederate battle flag from the public sphere in some cases. I want to talk a little bit about putting context around some memorials. Christine, we talked a little bit about Thomas Jefferson earlier. I was at his memorial in D.C. a few years back, and they have, you know, information about the Declaration of Independence and his role in that, the American Revolution, his role in that. And they have a display on Thomas Jefferson as a slave owner and the contradictions with the ideals he brought up. We can talk about both in some cases, right?
Yes, absolutely. And especially with people like Thomas Jefferson, for whom there really were, you know, in some senses, two distinct sides to his presence on the American scene. Someone who did hold slaves, but someone who also, you know, professed many of the truths that we still hold dear in the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. It's important to be able to see both sides of the person and both sides of our history in order to understand how we got to where we are today. But to see both sides have to be presented. You can't just have a statue that just has a name under it and nothing else. You have to make an effort to make sure that all of the information is there and clear, and that one side is not given more purchase than the other.
With the monument debate and the action to remove these, do you see this as a significant part of addressing issues of racial inequality, or do you worry that it becomes kind of a sideshow and maybe distracting from some more immediate issues?
You know, yes and no. I mean, taking down a Confederate monument in a town square does not necessarily put legislation into place that, you know, helps reduce racial segregation in housing or schools. However, I do think that for the people who live in these communities, people, African-American people who, you know, have spent their lives walking under and looking up at a statue of a man or the flag of a country that would have enslaved them, that declared them to be less than human and less than an American citizen. Having those public squares changed does say something about where we are today, does enable a feeling of participation for those communities, does seem to level the playing field at least a little bit, if only psychologically. Symbols matter to human beings, and you know, having a symbol that would draw you into the earth taken away does something.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Tony is with us in Ladysmith. Tony, hi.
Hi. I just want to bring up some history with Germany. I don't think you see any monuments of Hitler and his Nazis, but you do see monuments of all of the people who were in the concentration camps. I think we really should start looking at some history. And as far as the ones that were put up in the 1900s and the 1920s, that was to promote the idea of blacks are less than humans. And they had lots of lynchings and everything else going on. And that was sort of to intimidate the blacks.
Tony, thanks a lot for the call. Tony pointing toward Germany as an example of how they remember, obviously, a dark stage in their history, Christine.
Right. I mean, Tony made a great point, actually. Germany obviously has a very dark history, but, you know, they can remember that history without having statues of Hitler standing around. In fact, in the city of Berlin, one prominent kind of memorial is the Stolperstein, or stumbling stone. There are not monuments to Hitler, but instead there are raised bricks in front of the homes of Holocaust victims that people walking around and through the city will stumble upon and stop and look at. This remembers the victims and still keeps them alive in the city's memory, rather than memorializing the villains of history.
Thanks a lot for that call. And I know, at least in some cases, there have been efforts. I think there was an effort a while back for a national slave memorial that didn't come to pass. I think it ended up kind of converting into the National Museum of African American History and Culture. But do we need to see monuments to slaves, freed slaves, escaped slaves, things like that?
I mean, I think that would actually be nice and an improvement because, you know, if you want to remember history, you do want to remember all of the parts of history. You want to remember the heroes and the successes of other groups, too. When you look at our education system, when you look at what's taught in elementary schools and middle schools, so much of what is taught is, in some ways, the history of, if not the victors of the Civil War, at least the side of a certain philosophy of the Civil War. But I think that what many populations, Black people in the United States, minorities, would like to see their stories elevated, to see themselves and their communities also celebrated as heroes of the American story. Again, as I was saying, that symbolism makes a difference. So why not, you know, have a statue of Ida B. Wells or Harriet Tubman? Both of them have certainly done more for the United States as it stands today than Jefferson Davis did.
In our last minute or so, Christine, there's a lot of movement right now. Do you think that this is going to be an ongoing thing, or do you think it's going to fizzle with our short attention spans?
I mean, this question has been ongoing for the past several years, and I think it has gained momentum in this current crisis. And I don't think that that momentum is going to be rolled back. The George Floyd protest took place in 50 states and even 18 countries. Even in the UK, in Belgium, in South Africa, the debates about who to celebrate, which statues to keep up, and who to memorialize have spilled out from our shores. You know, statues feel permanent, but they are not. And protesters have already begun to take this question into their own hands. I don't think this is going to be stopped very easily.
Christine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Christine Emba, opinion columnist and editor at The Washington Post. She was with us today to talk about Confederate monuments and symbols coming down around the country and why the long-running debate may be at a turning point. Still time for you to share your thoughts. You can do that over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.